It is Tuesday, July 21st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Michael Lippin in Washington. In the next half hour, an exclusive interview with the top U.S. diplomat who explains why he thinks this month's nuclear deal between Iran and world powers will make the world safer. Secretary of State John Kerry also responds to Iran's supreme leader saying last weekend that the nuclear deal does not mean an end to chants of death to America on Iranian streets. That's all ahead on International Edition. A few hours after the UN Security Council adopted a resolution on Monday endorsing the West's nuclear deal with Iran, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry discussed that deal in a one-on-one interview with VOA Persian Service Director Sitare Darakshesh. Kerry addressed concerns that the United States will refrain from pressing Iran on the issue of human rights or U.S. citizens that Washington says are wrongfully imprisoned in the country. The top U.S. diplomat also had a message for U.S. lawmakers who have been vocally opposing the nuclear agreement. Let's have a listen.
What the vote means is that people are hopeful that the transformation is going to take place over the course of the next months and years. They're voting for the agreement. They're voting to support what Iran and six other nations agreed on in Vienna. And I think it's an expression of confidence in that agreement. And it's an expression of hope for the future, for Iran, for the rest of the world. Obviously, that agreement is based on the hope that the nuclear problem will be resolved, that Iran will become a nation in good standing with the rest of the international community. But it's going to be proven not by a vote and not by the words. It's going to be proven by the actions over the course of the next implementation of the agreement.
Mr. Secretary, you mentioned that there will be some transformation. When the deal was announced last week, inside Iran, people came out to the streets. They poured into the streets. They wanted to show their joy. They were celebrating. Do you think it was too early, considering that the U.S. Congress has to review the deal? And also inside Iran, Iran's Supreme National Security Council has to approve it, and also the Majlis.
Well, no, I don't think it's ever too early for people to express their feelings and to be heard about how they feel about an agreement. Maybe that will have some impact on other people looking at this, and they'll understand how the people of Iran feel about it. So I hope it's a message that's a positive one, but I wouldn't say it's too early. I hope that Congress will see the possibilities of this and that the Supreme Council will see the possibilities.
You negotiated the deal as an exclusively nuclear issue. You did not get into other issues. Yet Iranians have high expectations from this deal, and they are hoping and they're expecting that their economy will change, their lifestyle will change, their everyday life will change. Are you concerned that those people with such high expectations would be disappointed?
No, I think that if the deal goes through and is fully implemented, the people of Iran are going to see an improved standard of living. They'll see sanctions lifted off of them that have prevented commerce, trade, travel, investment, all these other things. So a lot of good things can happen if this deal is fully implemented.
And what would you say to those who are hoping and who are expecting that this deal would help support the people who are for democratic reforms? It doesn't seem that the gates of the Evin prison are going to be opening anytime soon.
Well, this deal, as we said before, if we had chosen any number of issues between Iran and the world community or between the United States and Iran, you know, we'd have been negotiating for 10 years and never gotten anywhere. And we didn't have that kind of time because of the nuclear issue and where the progress was. We needed to negotiate exclusively on nuclear. And as it is, that took 4 years. So it was very complicated, very difficult issue. And I think that obviously the United States of America will never stop believing in democracy and in people's rights, human rights, and always stand for that. But this deal needed to get the nuclear issue off the table because we were threatened with the possibility of a nuclear arms race in the entire region. And nobody benefits from that. So we took a priority, we focused on the priority, we eliminated the potential of conflict over the nuclear weapons, providing it is accepted by Congress, accepted by the Majlis, and implemented. If that happens, I think the world will be a safer place.
You mentioned, sir, that it was complicated, and there are many complex steps that need to be implemented. Now, the process is going to be long, and some people inside Iran are concerned that because of this process, the United States is not going to be too hard on Iran as far as human rights issues are concerned, or the issue of the four Americans who are wrongfully imprisoned.
We will never, ever stop, first of all, raising the issue of the Americans who are held, but also standing up for people's rights. That's who we are in our country. But we also have to deal with other issues simultaneously. I mean, unfortunately, in the world of diplomacy and foreign affairs, you don't have the luxury of just focusing on one issue and saying, this is the most important thing, we're not going to do anything else. You can't ignore what's happening in Syria. You can't ignore what's happening in Iraq or what's happening in Yemen or what's happening in Egypt or in the Sinai or, you know, all of these issues compound themselves. And so we involved in public life and diplomacy in today's world have a very complicated mosaic that we're trying to put together, bring the pieces together. It's not easy. And in the end, it will be, those issues will be resolved through agreements like the one that we reached with Iran. But we have to fight for it.
Sir, if I may, I want to turn to Congress. You will be on Capitol Hill this week, and
yes,
you will be facing bipartisan skeptics from Congress.
It's okay.
They seem to remain unconvinced. What is your battle plan, sir? And are you going to bring anything new, any new arguments, so you can defend the deal?
Well, I'm going to tell the truth about the deal. There are many people who, frankly, some of them had opposed it before they even read it. I mean, many of them admitted they hadn't read the deal when they started opposing it. Some people just oppose the idea of doing a deal with Iran. But I think when people really look at what is gained here, when they see that this is a possibility of actually doing away with a potential of a nuclear weapon and of perhaps opening up the possibilities of other good things happening, of a new relationship, I think people will see the benefit of it. And obviously, there's a very powerful group of voices who are opposed to it, who spend a lot of money in opposition to it, and that's been heard. But I believe, I'm glad we have the 60 days. I think it will give time for people to really reflect and see that if you don't let this agreement go forward, you could be choosing conflict and war. That could be the alternative. Because if we don't have this agreement, then I believe the Ayatollah would say, why should I negotiate with these guys? They haven't delivered. They don't do it. Why would our colleagues in the world support the sanctions when they say the sanctions were supposed to be to get an agreement? But they got one and now they walked away. So the whole thing comes apart with great danger to the region.
Sir, you mentioned the Ayatollah. On Saturday, Iran's Supreme Leader Khamenei stressed that we do not negotiate with the U.S. About different global and regional issues. He said that we do not negotiate about bilateral issues. And he even said that the slogan, Death to America, are still going to be heard in the streets of Tehran. Does this mean that the embassy right here on Massachusetts Avenue will remain closed, that there will not be any U.S.-Iran cultural relations, and that none of the businesses from the United States is going to go to Iran anytime soon? So if I may...
Well, we have to, obviously, we have to explore it. I mean, on its face, it would seem that way. I mean, the statement was pretty negative and pretty dramatic, and, you know, I have no reason to believe otherwise. But I'm an optimist in global affairs. I'm somebody who believes that what you hear today, you may not hear in 2 months or 10 months or whatever. I just don't know. And for the moment, that's not what we're focused on. We're focused on the nuclear deal. And we will do what we have to do to push back against other activities if we think they interfere with the security of our friends or with our security. We will do what we need to do.
My last question, sir, is that we talked about high expectations from inside Iran. When do you think, realistically, that this deal is going to start working? And when do people, do you think that they will see real changes in their lives? Is it going
to be... Well, Congress has 60 days. So September 19th, there should, by then, sometime, there should have been a vote. If that has happened, that becomes the day that the deal begins to kick in. And then after that, there are certain things that Iran needs to do, and the IAEA needs to do, and those things have to be resolved, all of them, before the sanctions begin to be relieved. So you're looking at somewhere about 6 months or so. It's hard to say exactly. It depends what happens. But I don't think there would be much felt before that. But I think September will be the critical moment when people begin to learn whether or not this will be, in fact, implemented.
And does this include medicine? Does it include easier travel for Iranians to the United States?
Well, it includes the potential of travel, but what it includes immediately is the lifting of specific sanctions on finance, on banking, on the movement of goods. Foodstuffs will be allowed to be sold from Iran, pistachios, carpets, other foodstuffs. I mean, those things will be able to be sold. So it's opening up some things, but not everything yet. The primary embargo still remains in place.
So the long-term trajectory is positive between the United States and Iran?
The long-term trajectory has the possibility of being positive, providing Congress passes this and providing the Majlis and the National Security Council accepts this and we implement it. If we implement this, then we are on a path to perhaps opening up a set of opportunities. If it is not implemented, we're going to have a lot of problems and perhaps even the possibility of conflict, and I find that very tragic, and I hope that we will succeed in persuading people why this agreement actually prevents conflict, provides for security for the region, and will prevent the acquisition of a nuclear weapon.
Mr. Secretary, thank you very much
for
accepting to do this interview.
My pleasure.
With us.
Thank you, sir.
And you've been listening to Persian News Network's Sitare Derakhshesh speaking with U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry at the State Department on Monday. This is VOA.
Health news in notes. This is Living Better.
Feeling better might be as simple as taking a walk in the woods. Researchers from Stanford University followed about 40 mentally healthy individuals, half of whom were told to take a 90-minute walk through the city. The others were told to take that walk through nature. Upon return, the subjects who walked through nature exhibited less of what brain scientists call rumination or brooding.
This type of thinking is highly associated with onset of depression. We looked at the parts of the brains that are active during rumination, and we noticed a decrease in the nature participants, but no change in the urban.
Stanford PhD student Gregory Bratman says he doesn't know how much time in natural environments is needed to reap mood-enhancing benefits, but a suggestion.
We need to start thinking about how we can integrate nature back into cities.
Half the world's population now lives in cities. I'm Martin Seacrest for VOA's Living Better.
This is VOA's International Edition with me, Michael Lippin. Well, staying with the Iran nuclear issue, U.S. lawmakers have begun a 60-day period to review the deal that the Obama administration and other world powers reached with Iran. Michael Crowley covers foreign policy for the Washington online news site Politico. In an interview with my colleague Jeffrey Young earlier today, Crowley shared his view about what kind of reception the deal is likely to get on Capitol Hill.
Well, I would say a contentious one, to be sure, and you know, in large measure, a negative one. The U.S. Congress right now, both the House and the Senate, are controlled by Republicans who are, you know, quite hostile to President Obama's agenda in almost every category. And in particular, on this issue, Republicans are saying that the president has struck a very bad deal with Iran. Republicans in Washington tend to be very sympathetic with people like Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, so they're saying that the deal was too soft on Iran, allowed Iran to keep too much of a nuclear enrichment capability, and doesn't stay in effect long enough, made inadvisable concessions, and will be bad for Israeli security. However, the president does not need a majority in Congress to support his deal for it to take effect. Republicans will likely oppose it, and he will not get a majority. They will cast a vote, and they will vote against it, and they will vote to restrict him from lifting sanctions on Iran. But what the president is certain to do is to veto that measure, using his power as president to veto Congress's vote, and then it would require a two-thirds vote in both chambers of Congress to override that veto. And right now it looks very unlikely. That would require Republicans to get a lot of Democrats to side with them against the president, and that does not look likely to happen right now. So it appears that what will happen is Republicans will vote against the Iran deal, the president will veto it, Congress will not be able to override his veto, and the deal will go into effect. However, it is possible the president could lose that vote. It's not a sure thing right now.
And that was foreign policy writer Michael Crowley of Politico. Well, let's have a look at what the Twitter sphere is saying about the Iran nuclear deal. And International Edition's G. Abby Lee is in the studio for a look at what the U.S. presidential contenders have been saying. Hey, G.
Hi, Michael. I'm going to focus on the Republican contenders because the Democratic contenders are more or less on the same page with Secretary Kerry. Donald Trump, who is leading in the polls, was busy retweeting his supporters' messages, but didn't mention anything on foreign policy during the last 24 hours.
Well, what about Jeb Bush? Has he said anything on foreign policy?
He sure did. Bush tweeted, "Congress must send a clear and compelling signal that the Iran deal is the wrong approach." And he linked his interview on the Mike Gallagher Show, which is a nationally syndicated conservative talk show.
Well, what about some of the other candidates on the Republican side who are trailing behind Trump and Bush? What have they said?
Well, Rand Paul was busy talking about the tax code and the Planned Parenthood, but didn't tweet anything about the Iran deal Tuesday. Marco Rubio tweeted about an hour ago that the Iran deal is nothing but an exhibit for the president to push in his presidential library. That tweet has been marked as a favorite more than 100 times so far. Scott Walker, the latest Republican to join the race, also criticized the nuclear agreement and President Obama. He wrote, "Barack Obama caves, circumvents American people, fails to protect the right of Congress to vote on hashtag Iran deal before the UN does." That's been retweeted and marked as a favorite nearly 180 times respectively.
Well, that's a lot of criticism there, as you would expect from Republicans. Well, thank you for that analysis, G. That was G. Abby Lee. And you can follow her on Twitter at G. Abby Lee. And that's Abby, spelt like the cathedral, not Abigail. And this is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Climate scientists from UCLA and NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory have found that some of the heat generated by greenhouse gases have been trapped and held beneath the surface of the Pacific and Indian Oceans. The researchers suggest that this may explain the decade-long slowdown in the rise of global surface temperatures. They found that a layer located between 91 and 305 meters beneath the surface of the Pacific and Indian Oceans has been gathering more heat than previously observed. According to the researchers, movement of this warm subsurface ocean water has produced an unusually cooler surface, which in turn has also cooled the air temperature above. Scientists said that similar decade or longer breaks in the rise of Earth's average surface temperature also took place in the mid-1940s and the late 1970s. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Well, this is VOA's International Edition. Well, gold has long been a safe haven for investors, but some of them might be thinking twice about keeping money in gold with prices falling to five-year lows. I spoke earlier to our business correspondent Alexis Christophorus in New York and asked her what's driving that decline.
Well, Michael, if you're keeping track, this is now the ninth straight day of losses for gold. August gold settled at $1,103.50 an ounce on the COMEX. That's a 5.5-year low. And analysts say a sustained rebound in prices is unlikely any time before the U.S. raises interest rates. It's also losing its luster as a safe haven for investors now that it looks like Greece really is trying to stay in the euro. And also China bought fewer bullion than expected, which also put some pressure on prices. And in fact, most analysts believe prices will fall even further. There's a commodity strategist at ANZ Bank, and he said gold could test $1,000 an ounce in the near term. And at that level, several mining companies might find it difficult to profit from extracting the commodity. Also, we should mention the sell-off in precious metals has also hit base metals such as copper. That has lost more than 5% so far this month. And analysts predict that gold will fall another 5% by the end of this year to about $1,050 an ounce.
Well, staying with commodities, the oil price remains weak. U.S. crude prices dipped below $50 a barrel briefly on Tuesday. But there is one analyst who's predicting that prices are actually going to double. Can you tell us more about that?
That's right. So even with Iranian oil expected to hit the market later this year, oil analyst Gary Ross is predicting crude will hit $100 a barrel within 5 years. And Ross is founder of the Pura Energy Group, and he correctly predicted last year's rout in oil prices. He was one of...
Well, that is it for International Edition on The Voice of America. I'm Michael Lippin in Washington. We'll catch you later.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
An African Union-backed court in Senegal has begun proceedings in the trial of former Chadian leader Hissène Habré, accused of crimes against humanity, war crimes, and torture committed during his 8-year rule from 1982 to 1990. The opening of the case in Dakar is an historic step for African justice, marking the first time that the courts of one country on the continent have prosecuted the former ruler of another for alleged human rights crimes. The trial concludes a 15-year battle by victims and rights campaigners to bring the former strongman to justice in Senegal, where he fled after being toppled in a 1990 coup. Habré is blamed for widespread torture and the killing of up to 40,000 people while leading the Central African nation. The United States commends the government of Senegal and the African Union for bringing the former Chadian president before the Extraordinary African Chambers of Senegal. As a signal of our support for these proceedings, U.S. Ambassador to Senegal James Zumwalt and Ambassador-at-Large for War Crimes Issues Stephen Rapp attended the opening of the trial on July 20th. This trial is an important step toward justice for the victims of atrocities committed under Habré's rule.